In case you missed this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this.
Most riders of Ben Healy's profile, and it should be said too that he's not someone who normally wins these kind of stage races. Most of them will be happy, but he wasn't satisfied, and his team wasn't satisfied, and he's turning into the story of the tour, frankly.
And we also had this.
You look back, and that's 13 years playing county football done, and it's surreal. Like, and
do you think he'll be back next year?
I will. That's something me and the wife and Malachy will have to talk about today.
Okay. All right. You can catch everything from this morning's Off the Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.
So this must be pretty satisfying because it was a totally different fight to the first two fights. And in many ways, it was the clearest cut decision, certainly from our standpoint as audience members, as opposed to one judge in particular, that Katie Taylor had over Amanda Serrano.
Yeah, I think by far it's the clearest victory. There's no controversy. Even from the other side, they weren't complaining in the ring. I think everybody kind of knew we won the fight. I was surprised to see that one of the judges had it a draw. I was a little worried when I heard that card. But outside of that, I thought it was a pretty clear win. I mean, it was a close fight for much of it. There wasn't much between them because the pace was fairly slow. But at the same time, I thought we were implementing our game plan pretty successfully as opposed to what they were trying to do.
At what stage in the build-up do you hatch your plan and make your decision that this is how you were going to approach this fight?
It's like you'd like to say you have these strategies all the time, but it doesn't always work that way. Sometimes what you want to do depends on what your body's able to do. So I think that there's been fights where maybe we got dragged in more than we wanted to, but sometimes it's because Katie's come into the ring with injuries before. For example, I think I've mentioned the last time she's had calf injuries that no one knew about. So, you know, if you've ever torn a calf, it's not easy to be on the balls of your feet moving around the ring. So sometimes that's what we wanted to do. But if the body's not allowing it, you have to adjust. And sometimes that means fighting a little bit more inside than you probably want. And going into this fight, Katie felt good. She was healthy. You know, it allowed us to use the ring. Now, I think Serrano probably cooperated a little bit with that. They didn't press the fight as much as I thought they might. And some of that obviously is the fact that we were moving, but I kept thinking and waiting, okay, they're going to pick it up this round, and it never really came.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the mics pick up Jordan Maldonado saying to Amanda Serrano after round 7, don't allow this to develop into a war. So that was very much their plan as well, or at least that was their intention.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what, you know, maybe they saw something in camp that made them think that was the only strategy that they could employ. Maybe she wasn't doing well trying to press the action with sparring partners, or maybe she had an injury or something. I don't know. You know, you can't speculate as to what they were thinking, but to try to beat Katie in the middle of the ring in a boxing match is never going to make sense for someone with that style. We have faster hands, faster feet. So I think after the first round, there was hardly a punch landed, but I had said to Katie, I love this pace. Like, we'll take this pace all night. We could do this for 20 rounds.
I guess part of it, I think it might have been, well, we've lost the first two fights. We have to try and do something different. And that's the power of being 2-0 going into this, is that level of confidence. And maybe as a team, you don't second guess yourself in a way that maybe, and again, we're speculating that maybe the Serrano camp did.
Yeah, and it's one of the things I said when Netflix had come to film one of the pre-fight documentaries. I said, you know, for someone who thinks that they won both of the previous two fights, it's funny how they seem to feel the need to make so many changes as far as training and style. You know, if you thought you won, why would you change what you're doing? And sometimes I think that's the mistake people make going into a rematch. Like, if you've had success with something, why would you change that? So, you know, again, I don't know what they were thinking, but I'll take the outside boxing all day with Katie.
That's really interesting to hear what you said a couple of minutes ago about how Taylor needs to be at her kind of best physical condition to be able to impose her own style of fighting, which makes total sense. And I remember you mentioning the calf injury in the past. So I guess no fighter really boxes or goes into the ring 1,000,000% fit, let's say, or totally injury free, given most training camps are really difficult. But did you think that Katie's physical condition on Friday night was as good as it's ever been in terms of those little niggles that might pop up in a camp?
You're always dealing with something, you know. I mean, we you know, you're never going to be injury free. I mean, especially Katie just turned 39 years old. So I think Katie's kind of a unique situation when you look at her career, where her boxing skill set improved throughout her pro career, but physically her body, and in some ways probably regressed just through age and injuries and overuse and all the fights and sparring she's had since she was a kid. So you probably never really saw Katie like peak boxing IQ paired with peak physical prime. And it actually, to me, is one of the unique things about her, which makes her so great. I mean, she did this at 39 years old, you know, and what people have been saying, that she's been past her best for years, and she comes out and, you know, wins clearly over Amanda Serrano, who's a heck of a fighter, obviously, herself. And there's nothing that they could really do in the fight. They couldn't adjust. They didn't, you know, from the first round on, I never really saw an adjustment that Serrano's team made throughout the fight.
I remember you said to her after one of the first rounds, the first time you were picked up on the mic, saying, do not let her feet set. How easy is that to do in practice when you take that information into your ears?
Well, we had a lot of good sparring partners. We had a lot of smaller sparring partners that had fast feet and good feet. So I think just working with that definitely helped us, because Toronto does have slower feet. I mean, I don't think anyone would dispute that. And honestly, I don't think it makes sense for her to be wearing the Jordan shoes, because I think it's a heavier shoe. In the public workout, she had boxing boots on. And I think that's something that if I was coaching her, I'd have her wearing the boxing boots. I don't care what it looks like. You're going to be lighter on your feet, especially when you're dealing with someone like Katie, who's got good feet, fast feet. So yeah, I don't think that helped, you know, in that regard.
Now that's a good point. And it was something that opened up a bit of a chasm on the night, really. So the footwear, like, I mean, it doesn't take an expert to know that that is a bit of an error on their part.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Serrano and you put her in front of a heavy bag, she looks great. I mean, she's got, you know, she can obviously punch with both hands. She's got good variety. She goes to the body and to the head, but the bag's not moving. So, you know, my thinking was that, listen, if we don't ever allow her to plant her feet, she's going to have to be coming forward or backing up and punching. And that's not really her style. It's not her strength. So from that standpoint, in ways, the fight was easy for us, where we never had to really sit down and bite down on our mouthpiece and bang out like we did in the first two fights.
Yeah, like as Teddy Atlas put it on Twitter, Katie Taylor put on a clinic, more controlled and cautious, ring generalship, countering and defense. Like, that is what was, anyway, Katie Taylor's trademark. And it felt like a little bit of a throwback. And look, I'm sure that's something that you'd seen in training for years and years, Ross, but this clinic from Taylor, the control from Taylor, is why she's been an all-time great for so long.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, ironically, the only mark we had was a little bit of a headbutt that Serrano clashed heads with us. And, you know, again, goes kind of points to the fact that when you got a lefty and a righty, sometimes it happens. And, you know, it wasn't intentional by any means, but this is one of the, you know, few fights in recent years where we came out without a mark on our face. I mean, there wasn't a meaningful shot that Serrano really landed throughout the fight where I had any concern. You know, obviously she touched her here and there, but there was never something where she really hit us and, you know, rocked us and, you know, knocked us off balance like you saw in the first two fights.
It's really interesting, because I did wonder if the whole talk around the headbutting in Dallas and the whole talk about Taylor being a dirty fighter, if that informed how you actually approached the third fight.
I think it might have affected them a little bit. You know, it might have been one of the reasons why they didn't want to get close, where they were leery of clashing heads. You know, maybe her eye. I mean, she had the operation done, the surgery done in her eye. So I don't know if there was concerns there that it would open up again. But again, as the rounds are going by and you get halfway through the fight, at some point you've got to say, look, Amanda, you know, we got to press the action. I mean, I couldn't tell you a single time where they even went to the body and hit us with a good body shot. And how are you going to fight Katie Taylor without trying to back her up, hit her to the body and slow her down and make it a physical fight? Because the success that Serrano had in the first two fights was when she got close and got physical with us, and just never happened in the third fight.
In terms of the evening in general, Ross, how easy was it to control the build up to this and maybe the little bit of a delay. I think maybe the undercard went a little bit longer than a lot of us expected. We got maybe a few Irish people set their alarms a little bit too early for Katie Taylor. I think it must be midnight New York time by the time you actually came close to the ring. How do you deal with that as a coach when things run a little bit late in the night?
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought, you know, the main card was 8 o'clock, the local time. And, you know, I'm thinking the fights are going to fly by, but they seem to put a long break in between the fights, which I didn't understand. I thought just from Netflix perspective, you'd probably keep your viewership tuned in, you know, instead of having people switch the television off because they're tired of waiting around. But, you know, the thing with Katie, I mean, she's a veteran. So, you know, we're used to waiting. She's always been the main event for how many years now, where, you know, we're usually the last fight. So she's comfortable there and she felt good about her preparation and, you know, how camp had went. So, you know, waiting an extra half hour, an hour, just it actually, I think, benefits us because it's a little bit more time to warm up and, you know, just kind of shake off some of the nerves and get your mind right for what you need to go do.
Do you talk to her in that moment or do you just let her sit in silence?
Oh yeah, no, we're talking. You know, a lot of times it's just me talking. She's obviously quiet in the dressing room before the fight. So I'm just giving her a little bit of little reminders of some of the things she went through in camp, you know, and how hard she worked and the success that she has. So just it's, you know, in the back of her mind as she's getting ready to walk into the ring.
The other thing that I wondered in terms of the build-up was just Serrano missing the catch weight initially and then having to go back 90 minutes later to make it up. And I think Gavin Casey was making the point that Katie was having a nourishing lunch while Amanda Serrano was trying to lose a little bit more weight. Can that stuff actually matter come fight night?
I don't think it matters. If it didn't matter for us, it doesn't really change anything for us. As far as Serrano, I saw her. I obviously waited around to make sure that she made the weight and she didn't look drawn in or gaunt where she looked like she had really struggled. It could have been a situation where the scale they had in their hotel was just calibrated slightly different. So they're only, I believe, 0.4 off initially and she didn't want to strip down. So where she might've made the weight if she had. So she just took a little bit of weight off, but you know, it obviously helps us. We're off eating and you know, Serrano's got to sit there and wait around. But it also just points to the fact that I actually had told the promoter Nikisa that, look, while we were waiting, I said, this is what I've been saying, that Katie's not the bigger fighter, you know, despite the, you know, Serrano's come up from featherweight. It's great, but we just haven't chose to go down. If you use a simple eye test and you look at the two, they're the same size. I thought Serrano looked bigger than us during fight week. I thought she actually had bulked up a bit, her shoulders. And, you know, I don't think that helped her because, you know, again, I don't know if she just couldn't get off or she couldn't, you know, push the pace or, you know, if she wanted to, but I think going up and then ballooning up and trying to come down, it wasn't a wise decision if that's what they did.
So MVP have been pushing the narrative that Taylor's the bigger fighter and that Serrano will be doing well to live with her power. Is that what they had been saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I think it's a fallback. It's like, if it doesn't go your way, it's like, well, hey, you know, we're still the featherweight champion. And look, I give him a lot of respect and credit. I mean, Serrano's a heck of a fighter. And, you know, we've got to know them pretty well just from, you know, dealing with them for the last few years. And they're good people. I don't mind them. But at the same time, the idea that we're somehow this, you know, three weight classes above them. Serrano actually fought at 140 pounds and won a title before we did. It was like a year before we'd ever gone there. So, you know, again, she's just as big as we are. When we fought Cindy back in 2018, Amanda was there in the hotel. And I remember seeing her standing next to Katie. We were just passing by in the hotel. I said, man, she's actually bigger than Katie is. You know, they're about the same size. So there's no difference there as far as we just never chose to go down.
Just to go back to the style thing once again, it does feel like a bit of a throwback to the amateur days from Katie Taylor in terms of how she so expertly manoeuvred Friday night. We were speaking to Katie in the build-up to the fight and she had said that she had reconnected with her dad and had spent a little bit of time in the Netherlands with him and that yourself and Pete had been in touch about how training was going. Did he have any input in terms of how Katie approached the fight on Friday?
I don't know. I mean, he was here, I think, a few days when they filmed the Netflix. And then I was out of the state back in March for maybe 4 or 5 days where he had come here. I think she went to the Netherlands. I was with another fighter in Philadelphia for 2 or 3 days. So, you know, I don't know what they speak about, but you know, as far as stylistically, I think every fight for the last 9 years, we've probably wanted to box more, you know, than maybe we have. I mean, you go back to the Lenardo-Tau fight, which was after the first Brazoon fight. And that was an example where she boxed outside beautifully. And, you know, she had torn her calf prior to the first Brazoon fight. We took 5 or 6 months before we took another fight, and she had, her calf was feeling good and she was able to move outside. So I think that's always kind of the version that we'd like to see. And, you know, Katie said herself that sometimes, you know, she gets in there and she just likes to have a little bit of a tear up. So it's not, you know, it's part, maybe is the body not cooperating, but it's part, she also does like to fight. But I think with Amanda, Katie does have respect as far as the power, because she's felt it now. So with some of the other girls, she's been in there, she can get in there and mix it up because there's no concern about getting hit in the chin, because Katie takes it well. But at the same time, you know, I mean, Serrano has buzzed us a few times. So I think when you have respect for someone's power, you're naturally going to be a little bit more leery of what's coming your way.
And also having the mental capacity to be able to remove yourself from that when you just start to get the idea that this might dissolve into chaos again and the crowd starts to get up and the volume starts to rise. I'm sure the temptation when you're in there is just to start swinging and go back to the way the first two fights were. So to have that presence of thought to actually box your way through is quite remarkable. Yeah.
Slugging inside is an easier option. And, you know, even though it looks like you're throwing more shots, maybe you are, it's actually more physically demanding to move around the ring on your feet. It's like if you stand in front of a bag and just throw shots as opposed to moving and sticking like you're Sugar Ray Leonard, like that's going to make your legs tired. So it's the easy option to slug. And, you know, you have to be disciplined to resist the temptation to do that. And I always tell Katie, that's one of the reasons that fighters like Floyd Mayweather were so great, because he was disciplined for 12 rounds. He wouldn't change what he was doing for anybody. He didn't care if the crowd liked it, the commentator didn't care. He's going to do what he needs to do to win. And Katie knows that. And I think this was a perfect example of her staying disciplined. And obviously we were talking in between every round, just reminding her of what she needed to do. But, you know, it takes discipline mentally to do that. To stick to the plan and, you know, not go in to, and take that easy option to just say, you know what, let's bang out and have a little bit of fun here.
What did you guys do after the fight? Because I presume it's late in New York at that point.
Yeah, there was a press conference at 1:30 in the morning. And then obviously there was like, they had to do the post-fight urine test. And so we didn't get out of there until it was almost 3 o'clock. I was exhausted. I actually went to bed because I was leaving early in the morning. I had to catch a train. So, you know, I had about 90 minutes of sleep and I was on a train back to Connecticut. So,
man, to get even 90 minutes of sleep, I suspect, was a bit of an achievement after that high.
Yeah, it's hard to fall asleep after something like that. I mean, it's a draining week. You don't sleep great on fight week. And obviously your mind is constantly occupied and you're thinking about, you know, the what ifs and what do we need to do. So it's not a relaxing week by any means. So sometimes after the fight, you have that post-fight adrenaline and then there's just like a crash. So on the Sunday, I was just knocked out.
And are you straight back into the gym working with other fighters or working with some other sports people then the next morning?
Yeah, I actually was coaching a baseball game about 10 hours after the fight in Connecticut.
Okay.
Well, I don't know why I was even there. I was, you know, I don't recall much of the game, but
what level of baseball are we talking?
It's a 19U team. So, you know, it's back in Connecticut. Yeah. I got on a train at, I think, 6 a.m. I was in New Haven at 9 and I drove straight to the field. I didn't even drive home. I had the clothes in the car ready. So.
Right. And is this a team that you're involved in because you've got a connection to the team, or is it just like a parallel coaching venture that you've got going on?
Yeah, no, I've been coaching baseball for years now. Right. So it's nothing new. So,
did you guys win?
We lost that game, won the next day. So
right, okay. Not going to say you should have said New York or anything like that, but you got to be there for the losses as well.
Yeah.
It feels like the way Katie is talking at the moment, that she's definitely thinking a little bit more about finishing up soon than she has done at any point in the past. When you look at her words, it starts to feel like the end might be closer than we think. Do you think, first of all, Ross, that she has any more worlds left to conquer in this sport?
She does. She definitely doesn't have any worlds to conquer. I mean, if we're being honest, she didn't need to take this fight. So, you know, we haven't spoke about it yet. I haven't really spoke much to her since the fight, but, you know, and going into the fight, obviously you're not going to talk about retirement. You can't have one foot out and one foot in when you're going into what could have been, you know, this war that just never came. But, you know, so obviously we were focused on the fight, but, you know, we'll sit down at some point, I'm sure. And, you know, just trying to talk about the future, but, you know, I mean, if you're looking at it, it's probably a perfect fight to kind of sail off into the sunset. You know, you won the trilogy 3-0, and what else is there left to do? She's beaten everybody. If you look at her resume, there's no one in female boxing even remotely close to her as far as who they've beat and the fights that she's taken.
Yeah, and to get out in a very healthy position as well is really important. It almost feels like the Croke Park thing gets thrown out by Katie. Ironically, on Friday night at this point, it's like, I know I'm going to be asked about this, so may as well just throw it out there. And look, it's unfortunate. It's totally out of her control what's happened there. And that feels like to me like the last remaining thing that would be a real mountain to scale. But unfortunately, it's probably not in her control whether or not that'll happen, right?
It's almost a joke at this point, yeah. I think. I mean, it's been talked about for a couple of years, and I don't think it ever really made, you know, there's never too much traction. So to even bring that up, I mean, even if they started to talk about it, is it going to really happen? You know,
yeah.
I think there would need to be something really meaningful in place where maybe she would think about it. But, you know, I mean, obviously that the talks haven't even begun, you know, or a couple of days post fight here. So, I mean, you know, she just needs to relax and enjoy it. I mean, the fight itself wasn't difficult. She didn't take a lot of shots, but, you know, you take the shots in the training camp with the hard spar. So regardless of what happens on fight night, you have to recover from what you just did the last 12 weeks.
What does she do on a week like this? I presume she just goes straight back to Connecticut, likes to spend it pretty quietly and just reflect.
Yeah, she'll relax. I think maybe some of her family might actually be down in Connecticut, so I'm sure she's spending time with them and, you know, probably thinking about everything and anything but boxing at this point, hopefully. You know, I mean, I think she's definitely earned a well-deserved break. So, you know, just mentally, even just mentally, it's like when you're going into a fight like that, you never really sleep easy because you're just, as the fighter, you're constantly thinking about what you need to do, what's coming, so... you know, it's as mentally draining as it is physically.
One thing we can kind of say for certain at this point is that Serrano Taylor is definitely over. The trilogy is done. There was a clear winner. Do you have a favorite moment from the three fights?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's like, I can't really say there's a favorite moment. I mean, I think, you know, the last fight was probably my favorite just because, you know, we didn't really take any shots. So, you know, it's nice to come out without any bangs and bruises. You know, as far as the first fight, I thought it was pretty amazing the way we came back after the fifth round. So that'll probably be one of the more memorable moments, you know, as far as just the career as a whole, you know, to be hurt like that and then come back and win the second half of the fight is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was absolutely extraordinary. For you personally, Ross, what would the end of Katie Taylor's career mean for you?
I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, it's obviously been a great journey and a great ride, but, you know, you know, it's not going to last forever, you know, and I think, you know, realistically, again, I mean, she just turned 39. So, you know, it's not a surprise by any means. I think, you know, I have my own opinions on it and I'm, you know, kind of, you know, again, haven't had a chance to talk with her yet, but, you know, it's kind of something that I'd expect, you know, again, unless, you know, there was some Croke Park type of talk, but, you know, I don't really think something like that is going to happen. But again, I haven't spoke to her yet, so I don't want to like share what she's thinking because I haven't even discussed it myself.
Of course, is the ambition to try and help another fighter achieve the same sort of things that Taylor has done, or do you have ambitions to spread your wings a little bit further? Like, as you've mentioned, you've got interest in baseball and other sports as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always in the boxing gym, and we got the gym here in Connecticut is jam packed every night, you know, with kids, and you know, it's like I definitely won't be leaving the sport by any means, but you know, I mean, as far as trying to, you know, emulate what Katie did, every fighter. One of the great things about boxing is it's the most independent sport of all, so every fighter is going to be unique. They're going to have unique strengths, weaknesses, and journey. So you can't try to replicate what someone else did. It's never going to work like that.
Yeah. I mean, to have, even again, just on this trilogy alone, to have overseen a victory in two of the craziest fights we've seen, and then to, in a very calculated manner, carve out a final victory to take a clean sweep in it. As a coach, you must be pretty satisfied. I know we're pretty close to last Friday, but you must be pretty delighted with how this thing has turned out.
Yeah, it felt good. It felt good. You know, it's like I didn't know what was coming this fight. You know, I thought that it was going to be rough. I thought, you know, we were going to have to bite down. It was going to just be, you know, showing character again. And, you know, it's nice. I'd always joke that it's nice not to need to show heart. You know, it'd be great if we didn't have to prove the heart that we've got. We just go out and box, and, you know, and we did it. And I think it's amazing. So, you know, that alone, it was a great night.
Yeah, it certainly was. Well, listen, Ross, congratulations once again on getting the sweep against Serrano. And if it is the last time we've seen Katie Taylor, congratulations on being a massive part of her great career, but I'm sure we'll get confirmation on that sometime soon. Best of luck as well to your next baseball game. Hopefully you get the win next day out, because that's the next challenge on the line, right?
Yeah, it sounds good. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Nice one, Ross. All the best.
Off the ball, rugby.
The overwhelming kind of reaction is that he's fortunate to be selected there, that, you know, the likes of Tom Jordan, maybe Darcy Graham, that they're unlucky that they're not called up.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.